Well, there's a long list. Some are, you know, the major items that we would include are things like there was work that had to be done with the ductwork. There were additional costs associated with the operable doors because we did a different mechanization for the doors. Things like escalators, elevators, things like a beverage conduit system. So in the old Metrodome, we moved kegs of beer and soda and that kind of thing manually. And included now is this beverage conduit system. So you've got the beer, you know, coming into all the concession stands. All these things added, various pieces added costs. So it's difficult to identify.
So generally, technology, concessions, the five pivoting glass doors, elevators, escalators, you know, just kind of big picture. But as Michelle said, there's a laundry list of items that this went to cover.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You can't operate the stadium without adequate ductwork, for example, so that you've got the right heating and cooling for fans. So when we overall costs were increasing and as things came back coming in higher, we had these budget gaps, and essentially that's what the Vikings stepped up to take care of.
Well, we're 6 months, 6 months into this now, and you're $50 million over budget. And like Doug says, these aren't exactly signature features. Why should we believe that it's not going to go further over? I mean, why do you think this is the only gap you're going to have to fill?
This was the 100% construction document. So essentially what happened, you know, as the building is designed and as things are finalized and scope is identified, once the initial costs were based on what's called 50%, you know, design documents. So things were not completely designed, fleshed out, that kind of thing. The budget overruns that we looked at came when the construction documents came in and we were at this 100% CDs. So that's when the full scope was known and the costs were identified. That is now complete. The 100% CDs are complete. John, do you have anything to add to that?
That's the correct explanation. I mean, if you recall, the guaranteed maximum price was established back in November, and it was based upon design documents that had been produced in the summer of 2013. And so now with the completed design information that was issued on May 2nd this year, there have been lots of further development and enhancement of the design of the facility in between the documents that the GMP was based on and where we are now. And as Michelle and said, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of items that have been a part of this. And just to further explain the ductwork, because, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, the building needed ductwork. We're not talking about, you know, that there wasn't ductwork included. But what specifically Michelle was referring to is the upper bowl ductwork, the massive ductwork system that is in the top of the building, under the roof of the building. And, you know, I can't tell you how much throughout the course of this project the Vikings have emphasized the priority of fan comfort in the building and the fan experience, and, you know, and have wanted particularly precise levels of temperature comfort for fans, particularly fans in the upper bowl, and the continued engineering of that throughout the completion of the design made it necessary to modify that upper bowl ductwork to ensure maximum comfort level for the fans. And there was additional cost as a part of that. It was optional, frankly. I mean, it wasn't that the building wouldn't operate without it. But in order to ensure the fan comfort that the Vikings in particular and the authority were looking for, There was enhancements made to that air distribution system.
Are you expecting the budget will have to grow even beyond this, or are you expecting this is it?
Well, now that we have the 100% construction documents, we're expecting this is it. Now, obviously, as things move, there certainly will be costs that arise. We should be able to handle that with our contingency. As the owner of the project, you have a owner's contingency to deal with those things along the way. So I'm assuming that this should be it. I mean, this is kind of what we're looking for. Right now, it's sitting at $21
million. Viking's contingency is being used up as a part of this. The $26 million is being spent.
That backup letter of credit is being spent, and that money is now moved into the project, which is why it goes up by that amount. Our budget goes up by that amount, yes.
And are you anticipating using the $21
million? Oh, over the course of the project. I mean, that's quite normal for a project to go through a process where, you know, issues come up along the way. This handrail has to be moved. This has to be moved, and decisions are made that could increase costs. So,
well,
I do.
If it goes beyond the 21. Who covers that?
Well, it can't go beyond the 21. I mean, if it goes beyond the 21, then we'd have to look at, you know, making perhaps value engineering that would be done in the building with, you know, cuts that would have to be made, or who knows. But we don't anticipate, because we're done with the 100% construction documents, that's kind of the trigger point here that says costs are known and the design is known and the scope is known and we should be in pretty good shape. So that $21 million should handle the overages that could come.
Why not use some of that money or some of the Vikings contribution for the glass, for the bird safe glass?
Well, the bird safe glass, as I think you heard during the construction update, we have said we've worked with the Audubon Society. Can I take just 1 minute to just do a little history on that? You know, the Audubon Society first came to us in May 2013, which was after our design was completed. We had already done the event at the Guthrie. The board had voted on it. The city had seen it and approved this design. The main design feature that I think was really important was that glass, which really was the big distinction between the old Metrodome, which kind of sat as a very insulated structure. You couldn't see in, you couldn't see out. The whole design was centered around this, you know, transparency. You know, you'll be able to see clouds in the roof. You'll be able to see the downtown. So that design was done. When the Audubon Society came to us and we talked, it was very clear that the glass piece was probably going to be the most difficult thing to address. And we worked with them on design issues in terms of the way the lighting would be done, as well as operational issues, similar to all the other downtown buildings that have a lot of glass. We agreed to manage it operationally with them. They gave us a long list of their design issues that we followed, virtually all of them, and they also gave us a list of operational issues, and Jen has that. We've said all along that the design of the building, the transparency, see in, see out, is really significant. The fritted glass has always been an issue, not only related to cost, I mean, I think that's what the press kind of focused on, but also related to the design of the building. The fritted glass gives you a murky view as you look in, as you look out, and we also have some images of what a building looks like when you do this fritted glass. As we've looked at this whole thing and we've gone through everything, we have decided that from a design standpoint, it's really important that we keep the characteristics of the building. We've talked about this along the way. We've said we're going to manage this from a lighting design standpoint and from an operational design standpoint, and that's what we're going to do. We do have copies of the design guidelines they gave us and the operational guidelines they gave us, and we actually, you know, are moving forward with the original design that we had talked about with the building, with that glass.
Yeah, I would just concur. I mean, it's not a cost issue. It's a design issue. And, you know, Michelle did an excellent overview of the history of this and the time we spent on this. The design changes we did make to the lighting and the operational guidelines that we're doing, that all of the other buildings in downtown Minneapolis are doing, many of which have much more glass than the stadium. So, you know, we've worked very hard on it, but the design that was shared with the implementation committee, the city, the stakeholders, the neighborhoods throughout the state, we took the design throughout the state, and that's the iconic design that we need to stick with to deliver the building that was shown to the public at the Guthrie in May of 2013.
John, from other stadiums you're familiar with, is $50 million overrun on a billion-dollar stadium? How does that compare to what the industry typically is?
Well, you know, Doug, I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as an overrun. You know, I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I think it's, you know, I think what we're celebrating today is that the Vikings and the Will family have made a further investment of $49 million to make this the world-class building that it's going to be. We've had some challenges along the way with this project. You know, the good news is that the construction industry is busy right now, locally and nationally. The challenge that has represented for this project is that certain work has come in higher than was anticipated and was budgeted, and that has needed to be accommodated. But if you look at an additional $50 million being added to the budget at this stage of a project, some of it coming from what was already allocated as a backstop for contingency, you know, it's 5%. And a 5% increase that has been, you know, funded in this case by the team owner. If you look at other major league facilities around the country, you know, that's quite, you know, it's quite within normal experience.
On the construction costs, you know, so it went from 765 roughly to 803.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that, can you provide just a little more detail on the breakdown of what, how much of that was market conditions, the duct work?
You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of items that make that up. There's, you know, several $1,000 items to a couple of big $1 million items. A number of those larger items relate to allowances that were included in the GMP for items that weren't sufficiently designed last summer to be able to really nail the price down on. The operable doors is a good example of that. We had an allowance for operable doors based upon what was, you know, quite preliminary design back in November last year. These doors are, I mean, they're magnificent, and they're a prototype. There's not been anything built like this in the world. And so, again, as that engineering has continued to evolve and be refined, and the implications of those doors on the operation of the building has been more clearly understood. Again, considering fan experience and fan comfort as being one of the priorities, it has, you know, some of the, there's been other components related to those doors that have caused costs to increase. For example, you know, there's been engineering studies done since the preliminary design was completed last year that relate to how air is going to flow in and out of the building when those doors are open. And in order to, again, assure fan comfort, especially in the lower bowl at the west end of the building, there are now air curtains where, there is mechanization to control the way air will flow, the temperature of that air, so that people are not, you know, having an adverse experience as a result of those doors being open when they're sitting in their seats. And those kinds of things have contributed to some of the cost challenges that we've been dealing with here.
Right. Can you categorize them generally, that kind of stuff versus increasing the cost of steel and other materials? What percent was just the kind of stuff you're just describing with the doors versus just
Much more related to items of, you know, enhancement or ensuring the quality of the building, more so that than dealing with price increases in products. Frankly, the price increases related to products and materials and subcontractor bids have been predominantly Mortenson's responsibility, and we had a contingency within our GMP to deal with those kinds of things, and we've used that contingency to cover those kinds of risks that we assumed. And so those are not things that the authority and the team are now, you know, taking responsibility for. Those are things that we've had to cover.
If costs go up from this even more, will Mortenson just eat the cost, or will you go back to the Vikings and ask them to cover more?
Depends what causes any increase. And as Michelle said, you know, hopefully that will now be at a minimum because the design is complete. You know, we have now everything we need to go forward and build the building as completely designed. And as of today, this afternoon, we're receiving bids from subcontractors on bid package 10, which is actually the last procurement package on the project of any significance. So as of today, we'll have bids in and be able to award contracts for virtually every aspect of the subcontracted work. So going forward, you know, we should be dealing with are what I would describe as the sort of normal and customary things that come up on any very complex major construction project. And I think everyone can see across the street just how complex and enormous this project is. So there will be issues that will come up. And we will talk about who bears the responsibility for that. If they are items that are clearly within the scope of Mortenson's obligations under its contract, we will be expected to bear that responsibility. If they are extras or enhancements or things that are as a result of things that the team or the authority want to do, that is over and above what was originally included in the design, then those will be funded by the team and the authority.
Is there a time or a cap that the Vikings have already set? We will go above this, but we're willing to pitch in a little more.
Well look, this last several months dealing with these budget issues have been very frustrating and very difficult. And there's been a lot of behind the scenes battles, if you will. But we're, you know, I think the collaborative process that Mr. Poppin referred to during the board meeting between the authority, the team, Mortenson, and the architect HKS. I mean, those principles came together and came up with a resolution to move this project forward. So there were some very difficult issues and some frustration, but I think what came out of it was, as we've talked about, a building that it's going to preserve its iconic design, a great fan experience, not just for Viking fans, but everybody who goes into the building. And the public is at no additional risk, and their contribution is constant. It remains the same. And you know, knowing that going in, that was where the public is, that they're capped at $498, but we're over budget, so we had to sit down and have some very difficult conversations where, you know, they were difficult, they were frustrating, but we were moving forward. We think we have a great solution, preserves the design, preserves the fan experience, and, you know, I think our organization, our ownership stepped up because they want to preserve that design and that experience for our fans.
Would they continue stepping up?
Well, I think as Mr. Wood described and Michelle described, the 100% design construction documents are now in, and the design is complete, and there shouldn't be additional costs. And you know, we'll deal with things as they come. But I think this was a major step, significant step forward to keep this project on track, to keep it on time, on budget, and to keep the four principles working well together to deliver what's going to be a great stadium in the NFL, a great fan experience, going to be the best fan experience in the NFL. So that's what it took. Some hard work, but it, as you see, it's coming together. It's going to be a great stadium.
With this business deal in place, what is left now to get an NFL MLS franchise?
Well, I can talk about that a little bit. I think what the agreement that the Stadium Authority and Chair Calum Helgen spoke of today is, you know, a certainty to Major League Soccer that we have a Stadium Authority and that wants the MLS in this building, that we have a certain and an agreed upon business deal. We have a great market. We have a great stadium. You know, this stadium, the design, this fan experience is going to be outstanding for MLS. With the transparent roof, the pivoting glass doors, we're working on a house reduction mechanism right now to bring the house down, if you will, to 20,000 to 25,000, make it more intimate, to make it ideal for fans. The fan gathering spaces, both in the stadium, outside of the stadium. So the design, the stadium is going to be outstanding. We now have terms that work for the MLS, and we'll continue to work with the MLS and pursue a team. But we think this is a great market, a great stadium, and a great partnership with the authority to welcome a franchise into the market. And I'll defer to Michelle on any other comments about the action today.
Right. We just really wanted to move forward to be clear that, you know, the MLS was welcome in the stadium, that we were hoping to have the franchise come to the stadium. I think that was obviously what the legislators had in mind when they put together the legislation. And I do think it could be a great opportunity to have another permanent tenant that brings in people as well as revenue to the whole downtown core area. So by setting the rent, it was important that then we would signal what those costs would be so that they would have more certainty as they look at our market and what the opportunities are.
Did they request that you set this rent?
No.
Was this the number they picked? Or how?
No. We looked at market conditions. We had a lot of input from consultants and from SMG, who's our operator, looking at other markets and what a reasonable rent would be, looking at the kind of investment that would have to be made to bring a franchise here. However, covering for us, from the authority's perspective, it's really great because we get the rent, but the costs are borne, assuming that it's the Vikings, the Will family that ends up buying the franchise. All the game day costs and expenses are covered by them.
Well,
so,
well, why do it now? This wasn't a specific request from them?
No, but it, as I say, it just gives more certainty so that it makes it more real, saying, okay, here's our stadium. This is what it would cost for you to be here. So
we think we're one step closer to an MLS franchise in this building with today's action by the MSFA board.
I guess with the deal, does it make it more appealing to MLS to engage in conversations with another interest in bringing the Twin Cities here? I guess two parties trying to bring a team here.
Well, we've been focused on our situation. You know, we know there's other interest in the market, but you know, we're zeroed in on what we have to offer with, you know, fiscally sound organization and stable and excellent ownership with the Wilfs, as well as the building. We talked about a tremendous stadium, you know, the location of the building right on the intersection of the green and the blue lines. You know, lots of history within the U.S. on transit options being paramount for MLS game attendees. So there's everything lines up pretty well. You know, ultimately it's up to Major League Soccer, and they are very interested in this market, and we have a great market, but you know, that's where we are. I can't speak to what's happening with anyone else here, other than what we're trying to do is advance our bid, if you will.
What other steps are there?
Well, we'll continue to work with the MLS. We've been on the road. We've gone to a number of different markets and met with ownership groups throughout the MLS. We'll continue to work with the leadership of Major League Soccer, And we expect in the near term to advance more of a viable business plan, business proposal.
Michelle, being the mediator sometimes between Mortensen and the Vikings, when did you actually come forward with the dollar amount, $46 million? When did you have to break that news to the Vikings that that was the over budget, and how difficult was that conversation?
Well, this was a process over a couple of months, and it really, I mean, I will say, I think, you know, now as we look at what the Vikings are putting in and we look at what the overall budget looks like, it seems clean. It wasn't clean. It was very much a process as we worked to identify, you know, where were we at on this whole budget. As John mentioned, some of it were scope increases, some of it was pricing. You know, let's take steel, for example. When steel comes in high, you think about the amount of steel that's in this building. And when prices came in high on that, for example, the operable doors have a lot of steel in it. So part of the steel increase had a big impact on the operable doors. Is that about the doors or is that about the steel? So it was just a lot of moving factors and pieces. But the Vikings, the way the legislation is set up, the Vikings are really partners with us. We can't spend any money without their approval on this construction project. And we obviously can't increase the budget. We can't, you know. So it's a very, luckily, we had a very collaborative, however difficult, process. But they were with us at the table. It's not like we sat with our architects and our construction firm and then came to the Vikings and said, oh, here's the problem. They were sitting with us side by side as we worked through what could we do. And there were things that, you know, there were things that were done that had impacts of, you know, cuts that could be made here or there, things that would not impact either the significant design features of the building or the fan experience or the comfort of people. All those things were looked at, and we made a lot of changes. And then there were some things that were included and perhaps could be looked at as enhancements or upgrades as well. So it was a collaborative process.
But never was it talked about that you go back to taxpayers. I mean, that was never an option.
You know, the thing about this, I think since day one, it's been very clear to all of us. None of us have any misconception that the 498 that was put in by the state and the city of Minneapolis, that's it. There's no more. So we always knew that. So really our choices were to look at, you know, making some value engineering decisions, adding some additional money, trying to find ways. What we did do a lot of with our architects in Mortensen and various consultants was find ways of doing things differently that also could save some money. The mechanization system, for example, on the doors, you know, we now have switched to a hydraulic mechanization system that should save some money. So things like that were considered as well. So it was kind of a whole process that we looked at as we went through. So it's hard to identify any one thing. But I will say, and I really meant this as I talked about it, I do think that the process we went through with the architects, the construction firm, the Vikings, and the authority, as difficult as it was, I think it really kind of was a good collaborative process that we all kind of, you know, set the agreements aside and said, okay, let's figure this out and do what needs to be done to make this the best project we can have.
I haven't heard anything about the scoreboard. I know you paid for the additional sort of mounts in the stadium, but I haven't heard you talk about this expanded scoreboard. Is that still to come, and is there going to be still more money for that?
Well, we have a separate technology budget. They did already pay for the structural pieces of bringing that in. The technology budget is something that early on the Vikings actually, you know, really looked at in terms of wanting to have the technology be the best fan experience. All of that is in our tech, to implement those things is in our technology budget. We've accounted for it. It's included in the budget.
Can you give us an idea of how much higher the steel costs are compared to what we expected? I think steel was about $82 million.
Well, there was two major sections of steel, if you will. two separate contracts. The original long span structure, which is what you see taking shape out on the job site right now, that was about an $85 million contract that was awarded to the Lejeune Danny's team earlier, and that was accounted for in the original GMP. Where we had some budget challenges was in what we refer to as the non-long span steel, which is all of the steel that will basically surround the concrete structure. It will create the perimeter profile of the building, support the exterior wall system, support this very elaborate snow management system that will deal with snow that will be coming off the roof. We budgeted that steel at about $4,800 a ton, and there's about 7,000 tons of steel in that particular element of the building. Those bids came in around $6,000 a ton, and it wasn't necessarily as a result of commodity price increases in steel, because those prices have been relatively stable. It was really a result of two things. One, certainly a growing complexity in the engineering of that particular element of the project as compared to where it was back last summer. And secondly, and more importantly, just the change in the construction economy. I mean, it's just the fundamental change of supply and demand that has caused fabricators and erectors that are in that business to raise their prices and take advantage of the hot market that exists not only here but around the country right now. We got competitive bids on both the fabrication and erection from multiple firms, so it wasn't like we were just dealing with a sole source or anything like that. And we negotiated those numbers as hard as we could with the two most competitive proposers. But at the end of the day, we could not buy it for what we had budgeted. And it was a critical component of work that we had to get it awarded. We had to get it the steel and the fabrication process. And so we did that. And the majority of those additional costs attributable to that were covered by Mortensen. We had to use your term, we had to eat that within our guaranteed maximum price, and that consumed a portion of the contingency that we had in our GMP, which was there to deal with just those kinds of things. And there were certain a certain share of those additional costs that the authority and the team bore because it related to some additional scope of the steel work that we were buying. So,
if I could, can I make just two comments on the budget just at the end, wrap this up? Just one, we were faced with a choice to eliminate some of the fan experience or some of the iconic design items, and to the choice to eliminate and cut those things or increase the investment, and that's where we came down. The other comment I wanted to make is, and it's more detailed in our press release, but in addition to the roughly $49 million increase in contribution that the Vikings are making, in addition to the $49 million, there's $23.2 million that we are absorbing in costs as part of the TCF Bank Stadium project. So it's $49 million plus absorption of $23 million on that side of the project.
But Lester, you guys went into this knowing you weren't working with the final document. Isn't this just a PR move? I mean, you knew you were going to kick off of the $26.6 million a few months ago. I mean, isn't this just your opportunity to say, well, I mean, you had to know the costs were going to go.
Did we went through all this work the last 3 months just for a
apparently
PR move?
Rochelle knew, I guess. This is a process, and as we've gone through and again to maintain the iconic design, and the numbers came in not where we expected, and it went through this process that you've heard about. This was a difficult discussion and decisions, but we're excited about where it's headed, and Mortensen's doing a tremendous job. building the stadium. It's very exciting what's happening.
I've got copies of the Audubon, what they asked us for, what we did.
Well, what about the operator contract? I mean, what distinguished SMG from AEG?
Yeah.
The others.
Well, I mean, they all were really good. They were all very competitive. SMG clearly has more stadium NFL stadium management experience than any of the other companies. They are a very operationally focused business in addition to all of their marketing and promotional expertise. And frankly, the proposal they gave us from a revenue standpoint was very strong. So it was kind of that combination of things. I think they're going to do a great job for us. Well, again, these proposals all evolved over time, but their revenue package that they gave us was definitely, I don't know if it was the strongest, but it was one of the strongest. It was very strong. So combining that with their promotion and marketing and their operational expertise, it just had the complete package.
I would just concur with that too. Just that they very competitive. Three of the best operators in the world, and we had a tough choice, but a great choice, mm-hmm. and it came down to SMG being in our opinion the best operator. They've got Super Bowl experience. That's a factor. They're also great marketers. They also know how to bring events into the market, into the building, and so I just want to concur with what Michelle said.
What are they being paid?
Well, they don't get a fee until after our revenue guarantee. So the way the contract is set up, we are guaranteed on an annual basis $6.75 million in after expenses. So that's just a check we get every year. After that, the way the contract is structured, the next $500,000 is basically their fee. So that will be their fee, assuming they hit the $6.75 million target that they must pay us. That's a guaranteed revenue stream for the authority. Then they get the next $500,000, and then after that, the next $1 million, I believe, is shared 50-50 between the authority and SMG. And after that, assuming there's still more revenue to come from events, there's a 75-25% split. This is in the contract that is posted online.
Was the fact that AEG manages Target Center, did that factor in? Did you want somebody who was exclusively managing your facility in this town to be more competitive? Or?
You know, that was looked at, and they, of course, talked about why it could be an advantage having a company that's already in town with employees. There, you know, it was a balance. I think you could see some pros. You could, you know, it was certainly never a major factor in our decision-making. They all had very competitive proposals. They were all strong, but in the end, I think we felt like SMG came through with something that was the strongest.